Father.
All right, meeting's still going on. If you're going to leave, leave quietly. All right, our next speaker is from New Jersey. We got Donna W.
All right, Donna.
All right, where's the paper? I'm a recovering addict named Donna. Speaker statement. NA member chosen to speak at a meeting needs to be someone who is working and living the NA program of recovery, which is the 12 steps and 12 traditions. In areas where there is not an abundance of NA members with substantial clean time or experience with the 12 steps and 12 traditions, there is a possibility that a group inexperienced in Narcotics Anonymous may misunderstand NA traditions and invite speakers from outside the NA fellowship. There are several ways to avoid this situation. Our basic text, for instance, reminds us that NA members from other areas are willing to drive long distances to support new groups. The speaker helps fulfill the group's primary purpose, carrying the message of recovery to the addicts who still suffer. When speaking at an NA meeting, we should be careful to deliver a clear message of recovery by identifying ourselves as recovering addicts from the disease of addiction. It is not necessary to dwell excessively on our active addiction or war stories because we all know what it's like to use. We came to Narcotics Anonymous to stop using, and we're here to share our experience, strength, and hope of recovery. Again, I'm a recovering addict named Donna. I feel real blessed and honored to be here, and I want to thank God for getting me here safe, number one, for introducing me to the rooms of Narcotics Anonymous and to you people who helped me stay clean a day at a time, because I don't do it alone. And I want to thank our speaker before us, me. What I found out is Narcotics Anonymous is an educational and informative fellowship. I found out that the disease of addiction doesn't discriminate. You know, I thought it was distinctive characteristics that dictated or what an addict was. And that kept me sick for a very long time. You know, because I couldn't identify, you know, with the fact that I was an addict. I remember distinctively my last day of using. My clean date is June 27th, 1992. And I remember being up all night using and having to go to parole in the morning. And I remember laying on the couch in utter desperation. You know, feeling hopeless and helpless, in despair, and crying out, asking for help. You know, just telling God, like, I didn't want to no longer live like this, that it got to be a better way. You know, I'm just tired. You know, tired and exhausted. Because at some point, you know, it's no longer pleasurable. You know, it's daily maintenance, just like our opening speaker shared. It's daily maintenance. I remember going to parole that morning. And, like, I remember going in, seeing my parole officer and him telling me how pitiful I looked and, you know, how I was living. And, like, I had been ducking and dodging him, you know, for a very long time. I had burned a lot of bridges. And he sent a letter to my home and said if I didn't show up on this day, that a warrant will be issued for my arrest. So I came, you know, only when I'm backed up against the wall. So, he's telling me how pitiful I look and he's saying, put out your arms. And I'm thinking he's looking for track marks, and I proudly display them. And he slaps the handcuffs on me. You know, and at that moment, I realized I had been got. You know, and what crossed my mind was, like, it was a Monday, and on a Monday, there was this dude named Lefty who showed up with his paycheck at my house, you know, and that's what crossed my mind. the insanity of the disease, I was going to be missing out. You know, and I began to, like, curse him out, you know, and curse my father out because he's the one who turned me in. And I began to, you know, never taking a look at me, my actions. I shared that first to share that, like I said in the beginning, like, this disease doesn't discriminate. You know, and I'm an only child, you know. My father was a police officer, you know, my mother worked, you know, and basically I didn't grow up in harsh conditions, you know. Most of my needs were met and all of my wants were met, you know. Like, I chose to take a different path in life. You know, I don't have, you know, I don't have no horror story of my childhood to, like, you know, to blame, you know, my life's decisions on. You know, this simple line, the matter of fact of the matter is I was a follower. I was always searching and looking and never satisfied with me. You know, I'm dark skinned. I wanted to be light skinned. You know, I was an only child. I wanted brothers and sisters. You know, and, like, I sought, you know, self-satisfaction in people, places, and things. Real simple. And, like, the reason why I said Narcotics Anonymous is informative and informational, I never knew that until I got here. Never knew it. You know, so, like, you know, I'm sitting in the jail cell, and, like, and the bottom line is, like, he could have violated my probation. You know, through my active addiction, I ended up committing a crime, armed robbery. And, like, I was sent to prison. My sentence was 15 years with a 3-year sip. And, like, I did every day at that time. And I still not even blaming it on the drug, associating it with the drug use. You know, yeah, I used it, you know, to try to go back to court. It was a drug-related offense. I learned all that terminology from people who was incarcerated. You know, they educate you real well on how to get your sentence reduced, and they don't know little next to nothing. You know, but what I realized was, like, I was an example at that point. You know, it was my first offense. I used that. You know, it was my first offense, and I didn't deserve this, and I didn't deserve that. And, you know, my whole life I tried to play as a victim. You know, I thought the world owed me something. You know, that you were the source of my problem. You know, I never wanted to be accountable for my actions. We're talking about it wasn't the highs, it was the lows. A lot of people use the terminology that they hit a bottom. I have had several bottoms. Several bottoms. You know, and if I don't keep coming, you know, and working this program, I'll have another one. You know, my bottom will drop out, and I'll continue to, you know, use. So, I've had several bottoms. I've had bottoms in my active addiction, and I have had bottoms in my recovery. And what I've learned is that my tolerance grew each time. And what might have been devastating the last time might not be that devastating the next time. I remember being 9 months pregnant and going into labor, and sitting on the floor, and I was getting high and unable to put the pipe down and call 911. I remember that. If that's not a bottom, I don't know what else is. You know, and then when it's all said and done, you know, calling 911, amped out, going to the emergency room to deliver my baby, not thinking about the consequences that could happen, calling diapers, you know what I mean, and like, through the grace of God, none of that have ever happened to me. You know, that was a bottom, but then, you know, God allowed another bottom to happen. You know, when I was arrested this last time on June 27th, 1992, my parole officer put me in the county jail. He didn't violate me. And what he had said to me when he did see me 2 months later after letting me sit in the county, you know, and letting the fog lift and my mind clear, you know, and getting some of the resentment and anger out and maybe I would be more receptive to what he had to say. He told me I needed to go away. He said, you didn't been to outpatient detoxes, you've been to prison, you need to go away for a long time, you need some help. You know, and that's when the change started to occur. You know, of course I had conditions on it. You know, I had conditions when I asked God to help me that night, because I wasn't expecting that. You know, I wanted the miraculous miracle to happen. You know, maybe, you know, the earth's part, I mean, the clouds part, and I wouldn't have the desire to use anymore. I didn't want to be locked up. You know, I didn't think I needed that. Needless to say, I went to a long-term inpatient program, and I was introduced to the program of Narcotics Anonymous. And being the person that I said I was, a follower, thank God for the women who were there before me. They had sponsors. They were making the conventions. You know, they were going to the speaker jams. You know, I'm always attracted. It might not always be to something positive, but, like, I'm always attracted to things that look appealing. And these women virtually looked happy, joyous, and free. Like, they were enjoying life despite where they were. You know, and, like, so I followed them. You know, I followed them because I wanted what they had. I wanted the freedom. You know, I wanted the distress to disappear off my face, being worried that I wasn't home with my kids and, you know, all these excuses we make up. And really, when we were there, we weren't participating anyway. You know, so anyway, I followed these women and, like, I got what they had. You know, and, like, I was, from that, I was able to grow on my own, you know, through the utilization of a sponsor, you know, and like the person I was still, because like I was new to the fellowship, you know, we want things to happen instantaneously, you know, and I couldn't wonder why, you know, that my parents still didn't trust me, you know, why they still didn't want me in their home, you know, and I still wanted things when I wanted things. I was still manipulative, and I still, you know, thought the world owed me things. And, like, I was about to leave this program, and, you know, I had talked to my dad on the phone, and I wanted him to make his basement into a two-bedroom apartment for me. And he told me no. And it was the best thing he could have did. But see, I thought I was hurting him. I was like, well, I'm not coming back, you know, then. I'm not coming back there. I'm going to stay here. He was like, good then. You know, and like the reality of it was, if I would have went back there, I probably would have died. Because like on the weekends when I went down there to visit, like I didn't go to meetings. You know, I didn't connect. I didn't have a network. My foundation was where I got clean. You know, in Camden, New Jersey. That's where I went to the inpatient program. You know, I had developed a foundation there. And like, I thought I was hurting him, but I was really helping myself. You know, sometimes, you know, we think we're doing something on spite, you know, but the best thing comes out of it, you know. And I haven't left there ever since. You know, that's home now. And my first year in recovery, my father passed away. He got to see me with a year clean. And as a result of that, now I'm thinking that was a low, you know, and it was a pretty devastating thing because I was daddy's little girl. But like as a result of that, a little girl grew up. Because that was the person, you know, mom, she could say no, you know, and she pretty much stuck to no, but my dad's no's turned into maybes, and then his maybes could be turned into yeses until I, like, kind of, like, burnt all the bridges there, you know, and at some point, he developed the ability to say no and stay at no. But when he passed away, a little girl grew up, you know, and not only that, I developed a relationship with my mother. You know, a lot of people, when I first came around, I used to always talk about my dad, my dad, my dad, and they never knew that my mother was still alive, because the only person I talked about was my dad. So as a result of that, me and my mother's relationship grew. When I had 10 years clean, I lost my mother. That was a love, an all-time love in my life. That pretty much knocked me, like, for a loop. I ended up on depression medication, and, you know, like, the thought of using wasn't there. It wasn't there in either situations. Because what I got out of that was that I had come so far, you know, and I had, like, my parents, they wanted to believe in me, but kind of like never believed in me. You know what I mean? Like, I was a disappointment. You know, like, all their hopes and dreams and aspirations that they had for me never manifest. And, like, for me to use at that point would have been a slap in the face. You know, and that's what kept me clean, to be honest. It wasn't on my own. You know, I would have loved to take the easy way out. You know, I would have loved not to feel or deal, you know, and to use. You know, because I felt alone. I felt abandoned. You know, like I didn't have siblings to share in my grief. And I just sometimes the day, you know, I feel like alone. You know, but it's like it's forcing me to, you know, grow up, still in my process to grow up. You know, because like really when I really feel bad is when I can't call and ask for help. You know, I've learned to be self-reliant here. You know, when I can't call them and, like, you know, my funds is low and ask for a little money, you know, and my children need to go here, can you pay for that? You know, so sometimes, you know, things happen, you know, for a reason. You know, so it forced me to grow up a little bit more. I've had lows in my relationship. I've been in a relationship for 12 years and I've been married for 9. Of those 12 years. And we've hit several bottoms in our relationship for various reasons. And like I always want to look at what's being done to me. On any given day, I still want to play the victim. You know, you don't understand me. You're not willing to do this. You know, and I never want to look at the part that I play in. There's a lack of trust in my marriage. You know, my husband doesn't trust me. And some people say, well, how can you be married to a person that you don't trust? Well, it's the lack of trust that I created. You know what I mean? It was the lack of trust that I created. You know, trying to... thinking that I'm doing something harmless, but it's really harmful. You know, and sometimes we create our own dilemmas. You know, and like, that was I created that dilemma. And like, sometimes I want to blame him for his disease thinking, you know, and lack of trust in that area, but I got to remember where it stemmed from. It stemmed from me. So when we hit a bottom in that area in our relationship, you know, sometimes I act responsibly and sometimes I don't. Like, because, you know, that's why Narcotics Anonymous is not a program. Programs end. This is a fellowship. It continues on. So, and like what I've learned from that is like each time that I hit a bottom in my relationship and we're able to come through it, the relationship gets stronger. You know, I have learned that, you know, and I'm aware, it's a matter of me being aware of, I know where my husband's weaknesses are, and just being aware and mindful not to feed on those areas. You know what I mean? I got to do my part, you know, because that's how it heals. You know, that's how it heals. You know, like, just sitting up here, like, you know, 9 times out of 10, I blame him. So, I only when I'm, you know, up here in front of other people can I readily admit my part. For real. You know, I do. You know, I readily can admit my part, you know, and that's the healing process for me. You know, then, you know, I have an area with my children, Lord. You know, and Robin talked about that, loving them and losing yourself. Recently, I hit a bottom in that area with my daughter. I had her at 19, and like she's 19 and pregnant, and she's in her first year in school, and like that was real devastating to me. You know, I took that personally. You know, real personal, you know. I mean, last week my daughter called me on the phone. I mean, like, I kind of, like, disconnected myself from her because of that situation, if y'all can understand what I mean by that. But she called me on the phone last week when I was at work, and she, you know, she wanted to express her feelings. And she said that, you know, I don't talk to her, you know, that she's in school all by herself, and, you know, I don't call. And if she calls, I say, well, what do you want, you know? And she was just telling me how she felt and how abandoned she felt, you know, and that all she wanted was, she knows that I don't agree with her decision, you know, but all she wanted was my support. And I got the inability, I can't do it yet. I'm not there. Still, today, I'm not there. But what I did do is I'm putting forth an effort. Like, you know, she called me last week, and she said, you know, that I'll never call, I'll never reach out to her, and just to say that I love her and this and that and the other. So this week that just passed, I called her on the phone. And I left a message that I loved her, asked her how her day was going. And even though I'm not there, I'm pretending to be there. You know, I'm not there, you know. So, like, I'm going to fake it till I make it. You know, if I start putting forth the effort, I'll get there. You know, because what I learned in this process, you know, if you don't put forth the effort, you'll never get there. You know, and all it's going to do is make the wedge widen, you know. And, like, I'm like, damn, I'm going to be a grandmother, you know. I'll be just 40 in May, you know, like, and it's like to me it was like a personal attack, you know, and I know that she, and that's my disease. I need to expose, that's my disease, because I know she didn't intentionally set out and say, I'm going to get pregnant and hurt my mother. You know, that was not her intentions at all. But my disease tell me that was a personal attack, because I told her to stay on them birth control pills. You know, and like, you didn't listen to me, and when you don't listen to me, this is what happens. You know, and I was there. I was 19, pregnant with her, and I remember those feelings of feeling like my mother wasn't supportive and abandoned me. You know, I remember how I felt, and I'm repeating the cycle. You know, I'm repeating the same cycle. You know, and like, I'm not there yet, though. I have no acceptance with her situation and what is going on, but all I'm going to do is, like, despite how I feel, I'm going to do something different. You know, I might not feel like I want to be supportive, but I'm going to try and be supportive. You know, despite how I feel, I'm going to show up. You know, and I was already in my mind on her day of delivery. I'm like, yeah, I hope she's in the worst amount of pain, and I hope that little nigga don't show up, and she's going to be in there all by herself. I mean, this is my thinking. You know, like, I don't even, you know, like, she had asked me before, This is when I was being, had an attitude of indifference or entitlement. And she was like, well, when I know what the baby is. Do you want to know? And I was like, no, why? You know why? What difference do it make? Boy, girl, whatever. You know, and I know now that she's having a boy. You know, I'm now trying to, you know, be a part of that. You know, she's having a boy. She's going to name it Alan. And I, you know, all my little things inside of me wanted to make a negative comment about the name. You know, but I'm trying not to be so controversial with this issue. You know, and it's real hard because I'm not there. You know, I feel like this is a low. You know, but I need to just say this in closing that no matter what, you know, like I don't have to use. You know, I haven't had the desire to use. And whatever happens, it's not in my hands. You know, like I am not the ultimate authority. You know, there's a loving and caring God. And just like he saw me through, he'll see her through. You know, and I got to realize that she's not me. You know, and maybe, you know, she got pregnant at 19 like I did. But I wasn't in college like she was. You know what I mean? I'm trying to make, you know, I see me in her. You know, I see me in her. But it's a different situation. It's totally a different situation, you know, and like, you know, this is her process, you know, and I got to allow her process, you know, like I had my process, you know, and like I just try to remember like all the feelings and emotions I had and like, you know, try to be more supportive, you know, even though it's hard, you know, even though it's real hard. You know, so just for today, like, I'm going to practice some humility. Because when I deal with her, that's what I need to do, practice some humility. Put away the pride and the ego and even the motherness, you know, and try to be more loving and caring like I am towards y'all in these rooms. You know, practice what I preach. So just for today, like, I'm going to do something different in my life. And promote you to do something different in yours. Thanks for letting me share.